This is The Gay Life. Good morning. I'm Randy Alfred. And this morning on The Gay Life, we'll be discussing the action of the National News Council on my complaint against the CBS documentary, Gay Power, Gay Politics. This action was taken by the National News Council on September 18th in Des Moines, Iowa. First, let me read you what the council's action was. The CBS documentary, Gay Power, Gay Politics, touched many sensitivities and provoked passionate reaction and protest. The central complaint is, as noted in the staff analysis, unusually complex. It is required grouping under three headings: the political campaign, the sexual issues, and the applause issue. On the political campaign issue, it is clear that the mayor and her rival in the runoff election acted in standard political fashion in seeking to win the vote of the gay community. CBS News was not alone in its editorial judgment that Mayor Feinstein's apology for what she had said in Ladies Home Journal about gays and community standards was a pivotal factor in her endorsement by the gay community. Both San Francisco Daily newspapers accorded special importance to that apology. Its significance was further underscored by a respected gay leader's flat statement that Mayor Feinstein would not have received the gay vote if she had continued to make such comments. Elsewhere in the program, CBS did note other political issues, and specifically the gays' calls for greater security against violence by heterosexuals and by what they consider police harassment. For these reasons, the complaint with respect to the election campaign is found unwarranted. The council finds unfairness in the presentation of the sexual issues. By concentrating on certain flamboyant examples of homosexual behavior, the program tended to reinforce stereotypes. The program also exaggerated political concessions to gays and made those concessions appear as threats to public morals and decency. The council exempts from this criticism the program's attention to Buena Vista Park. Inquiry by the council's staff confirmed the existence of widespread opposition to the usurpation of the park for sexual purposes. The many hearings before public bodies show that its misuse was a subject laden with political significance, whether or not it arose specifically in the mayoral campaign. However, justification cannot be found for the degree of attention given to sadomasochism or the treatment of the Bozar Ball and the Halloween sequences. Authoritative sources agree that sadomasochism is practiced extensively by heterosexuals, yet the broadcast treats it as a distinctively homosexual phenomenon. The chateau, pictured as an example of sadomasochistic indulgence, is owned by and patronized almost exclusively by heterosexuals. The Halloween events were presented in a manner both confusing and misleading. The children's party, early in the evening, was made to appear frightening because of the gays' presence at the party. The council finds troublesome the abrupt transition from the discussion of decadence to the Bozar Ball. The Bozar Ball, held up as an example of decadence, is an accepted community event in San Francisco. While sponsored by gays, it is also attended by heterosexuals, and the proceeds go to many community programs. In dealing with a demystification program in the schools, CBS failed to make clear that supporters see as its purpose a reduction in the danger of harassment and violence by heterosexuals against homosexuals. CBS conveyed so little solid information that it left a frightening impression, fostered in part by pictures of men embracing and kissing. The council's investigation showed, by contrast, that civic leaders generally view the program as a useful bridge for better understanding between the gay and the majority communities. While there is unquestionably room for argument on the appropriateness of such a project in the schools or on how it is executed, what came through on the CBS program was that the demystification project was simply a gay thrust to promote homosexuality in the schools with the financial support of the mayor. Mr. Reisner asked at the end of the broadcast whether the gays' national political objectives will include a demand for absolute sexual freedom, as they did in San Francisco. The undue emphasis on sadomasochism and the distortions of the Halloween party and the demystification program contribute to a picture of what Mr. Reisner means by a demand for absolute sexual freedom. The reality is that homosexuals are not monolithic in their behavior or their political objectives. Many abhor public sex. Their principal objective is a climate of tolerance that permits them to operate in the mainstream of their communities. The unwillingness of gays in this category to break ranks with extremists by repudiating more flamboyant demands created reportorial problems for CBS, but it did not relieve it of its obligation to present a fair picture. The Council finds the complaint warranted as it applies to the treatment of sadomasochism, the Demystification Project, the Halloween Party, and the transition from a discussion of decadence to the Beaux-Arts Ball. As for the applause issue, CBS News has acknowledged that through the insertion of applause where there was none after the mayor's apology, it violated the network's own standards and has offered an apology for that violation. Also, the network is candid in its response that it would have been wiser to have reported in full the mayor's comments in the Ladies' Home Journal instead of paraphrasing them. The council welcomes CBS's candor in both these admissions. Now, that was the decision of the council, and there was a dissent, and we'll talk about that somewhat later, in fact, next week. I had intended to present on this show excerpts from the council's actual deliberations as they discussed the staff report and decided on what they would say in their council action. Unfortunately, the audio system in the room where the meeting was held was pretty terrible, and only some of the microphones were working properly, and consequently only some of the speakers were heard, and even if I took those good excerpts, they would be talking about things that had just been said that you wouldn't have heard. So consequently, it won't be possible for us to give you examples and excerpts from what the News Council's actual deliberations were like. But there is an extensive staff report which carries much of the back and forth of what was in my complaint against the CBS documentary, what CBS said in response, and what the staff found when they went out and carried their investigation. So what I'm going to do is read you the staff report. I'm not going to be able to finish the entire report this time, but we'll conclude it next time, and I'll also reread on the next show what the conclusions of the News Council were, as well as the dissent by Mr. Rusher. But before we actually get into the staff report, I'd like to talk a little bit about those deliberations. There were two people who mainly opposed taking any action against CBS, and they were William Rusher, who is the editor of the conservative journal The National Review, and Jeffrey Bell, who is a board member of the American Conservative Union. On the other hand, the strongest support for taking strong action against CBS came from the one woman and the three blacks on the council, specifically Robert Maynard, who is the editor of the Oakland Tribune, who was the most eloquent and forceful spokesperson for seeing what the distortions were in the show and calling for a strong statement against CBS, and Edward Lawson, who is a minister from Los Angeles. He's the pastor of the Holman United Methodist Church, and Franklin H. Williams, who's president of the Phelps Stokes Fund and former ambassador to Ghana. And throughout the deliberations, all three of them consistently made references to and analogies between the way blacks used to be and still are treated in the media and the way gays are. The Reverend Lawson, for instance, specifically mentioned that in the public's mind, the black movement was seen as not being about civil rights and equality of opportunity for jobs and education, but was seen as an issue of racial mixing, of miscegenation. And he felt that what was happening with respect to gays was that instead of seeing the same demands for equality of opportunity for jobs, for freedom of harassment, for freedom from violence, instead the issue of sex and public sex and sadomasochism were being put before the public instead. Those kinds of analogies were made consistently by the three blacks on the council, all of whom were very, very angry at what CBS had done in this documentary. And now for the staff report of the National News Council in the issue of the CBS documentary. Complaint number 7180, San Francisco Board of Supervisors, San Francisco Human Rights Commission, National Gay Task Force, Randy Alfred, et al., against CBS News. Nature of complaint. Relying principally on an original complaint by Randy Alfred of San Francisco, California, a reporter, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, by formal vote, that city's Human Rights Commission, and the National Gay Task Force joined to complain that a one-hour CBS TV network report, Gay Power, Gay Politics, broadcast on April 26, 1980, quote, tends to demean, disgrace, and dishonor the entire journalistic profession through the systematic use of hearsay, oversights, exaggerations, distortions, inflammatory buzzwords, leading questions, and misleading and deceitful editing. The documentary, described by anchorman Harry Reasoner as a report on, quote, how the gays of San Francisco are using the political process to further their own special interest, just like every other minority group before them, close quote, was produced by Grace Dekaus and George Kreil, with Mr. Kreil serving as narrator. Mr. Alford asserted that the documentary, quote, ignores major issues on the one hand while exaggerating and fabricating issues on the other, close quote. The broadcast presented a succession of events, scenes, and interviews leading into and surrounding the city's mayoralty campaign of 1979. There were two elections, the first a primary on November 6th, in which acting mayor Dianne Feinstein was opposed by Quentin Kopp, a member of the Board of Supervisors, David Scott, a gay businessman, and seven other candidates. Mayor Feinstein, as a supervisor, had taken over as mayor following the assassination on November 27, 1978, of Mayor George Moscone, along with Supervisor Harvey Milk, a gay. A runoff election was forced when Mayor Feinstein received 42% of the votes to 40% for Mr. Kopp and 10% for Mr. Scott. Campaigning for the runoff between Mayor Feinstein and Mr. Kopp was lively and heavy during the 34 days following the primary, with both candidates publicly seeking Mr. Scott's support and the support of the gay community. Mayor Feinstein was elected on December 11th. Mr. Alford wrote that numerous minor errors during the course of the broadcast tended uniformly towards the outrageous editorial stance of the producers, exaggerating preoccupation with sex, minimizing the gay concern for physical safety on the streets and in the bars, making all the phenomena understudy appear more sudden, recent, and threatening, and making the mayor and city's establishment seem craven and intimidated. The producer's view is revealed clearly in the opening of the show and in its conclusion, Mr. Alford charged. From the first, talk of politics is used to voice over scenes depicting or suggesting sexuality. Sex and politics are repeatedly confused right through to the conclusion. Close quote. Referring to Mr. Reasoner's use of the word special interest in his opening comments, the complaint said that the implication is that there is only one interest. Thus, the program is barely underway when the deceptive mixing of politics and sex begins. For the last words on the show, after an hour of setting up its audience, CBS trots out Harry Reasoner with the unsupported declaration that gays in San Francisco demanded absolute sexual freedom. In between, we have seen a major issue made of a question that is never asked of any gay leader. Should public parks be used for sex? Private membership clubs, under attack throughout 1979, are made out to be free of government interference. An actual controversy, the redesign of Buena Vista Park, is glossed over in typically inflammatory and one-sided fashion. Close quote. Mr. Alford, in his 19.5-page single-space complaint, detailed 44 charges, many of which he said, quote, contribute to the cumulative effect of pattern distortion, close quote. In its resolution approved on June 2nd by 10 of the Board of Supervisors' 11 members and forwarded to the Council, Gay Power, Gay Politics was charged with, quote, total disregard for principles of good journalism by providing a series of images of the darker practices of the gay community intended to startle viewers and show how gays are attacking traditional values and frightening heterosexuals. The supervisors charge further that the program grossly distorted the many positive contributions that the gay community has made to the culture and politics of the city, and that the CBS documentary has done great harm to San Francisco by slandering the city before a nationwide audience. The resolution by the Board of Supervisors was signed on June 9th by Mayor Feinstein. In a resolution adopted on May 22nd and forwarded to the Council, the Human Rights Commission declared that this alleged documentary claims to represent the actuality of gay influence and practices relating to San Francisco's political structure, but instead conveyed distorted information pertaining to the behavior and attitudes of the gay community, which contributed to the perpetuation of stereotypes. The National Gay Task Force, in its letter to the Council dated July 18th, and co-signed by Charles F. Bryden and Lucia L. Valeska, co-executive directors, charged that the program unjustly maligned and stigmatized gay people by presenting an inaccurate and unbalanced view of the political work of San Francisco's gay community. The National Gay Task Force complaint further charged that the program ignored those gay political and business leaders in the city who were outspoken in their concern for gay problems such as employment and housing discrimination, health care, child custody, the need for social outlets other than bars, public safety, and immigration issues. And it further ignored those gay people who are active in the political process, such as Supervisor Harry Britt and Police Commissioner Joe Daley, among others, and the pioneering gay Democratic and Republican political clubs that provided the organizational base for mainstream political action. The National Gay Task Force concurred with the analysis submitted to the Council by Mr. Alford, referring to it as detailed substantiation of our contention that this program was inaccurate, misleading, and distorted. The National Gay Task Force refers to itself as the largest gay civil rights organization in the U.S., with over 10,000 individual and organizational members. It declared that it had received nearly 1,000 letters and phone calls protesting the CBS program. Response of the news organization. CBS News responded to the complaint in a letter dated September 4th and received by the council on that date. Writing on behalf of the network, Robert Chandler, Vice President and Director of Public Affairs Broadcasts, said that the complaint represents a significant... By our count, it includes some 44 separate allegations, some of which are important, others of which are trivial, irrelevant, or clearly represent matters of opinion or judgment. In our view, Mr. Chandler continued, the complaint boils down to three essential grievances, which we would characterize as follows. Number one, the campaign issues. The complaint, in its essence, is that we distorted the nature of the mayoral campaign in the gay community, that we focused exclusively on the matter of community standards and the demands for an apology, to the exclusion of other issues of far more importance to the gay community, that in focusing on the issue of the apology, we made it appear that the only concern of the gay community involved matters of sexual behavior, when, in fact, that was a lesser or minor issue. In a larger sense, the complaint suggests that at a time when gays nationwide have not achieved what they believe to be equal rights and protection of the law, our broadcast portrayed them as obsessed not with the attainment of these objectives, but with the desire only to maintain their sexual freedoms. Two, the sexual issues. The essentials of these charges are that to support the above thesis, we brought into our broadcast sensationalized issues and materials, sexual in nature, that had no connection with the campaign, that were in part activities reflected in heterosexual behavior, and that were designed to portray gays unfairly by suggesting that the acts of an irresponsible minority were being generalized to the majority of gays. Specifically in this category were those parts of the broadcast devoted to public sex in Buena Vista Park and sadomasochism. To a lesser extent, the scenes of the Bozar Ball and of Castro Street fall into this category. And finally, the Harry Reasoner observation that gay leaders had been insisting on an absolute sexual freedom is a subject of complaint. Number three, the applause. Although the allegation that there was no applause directly following the mayor's apology is an issue that falls into the broader question addressed in number one above, the specificity of the charge requires that it be addressed separately. The applause issue refers to remarks made by Mayor Feinstein at a meeting of the Harvey Milk Gay Democratic Club, a gay and lesbian organization, shortly before the runoff election. At that time, the mayor, according to the narration by Mr. Kreil, apologized for a statement attributed to her in an article published in the March 1979 issue of the Ladies' Home Journal. The published statement, as Mr. Kreil paraphrased it, was, quote, "All she said was that gays should observe community standards, that they should enforce their lifestyle on others. But this seemingly moderate criticism outraged the homosexual community," close quote. In the on-air presentation of Gay Power, Gay Politics, applause followed the mayor's apology. Mr. Alford charged that there was no applause at this point. "It seems appropriate to deal with the allegations about applause first," CBS said in its response. Mr. Alford is correct. The audience did not applaud at that moment, but shortly thereafter, following her reference to the appointment of a new police chief. Our producers did not use the applause shot out of any desire to distort, but because they believed that the audience was in fact applauding the apology, that they were so surprised that it took them several moments to realize what had occurred, and that they applauded at the next appropriate pause, two sentences later, some 25 seconds after the conclusion of the apology. And our producers also used the applause as a means of separating the mayor's prepared speech from the question and answer period depicted immediately following her apology. They note that in interviews following the meeting, it was the apology that was for gays the highlight of the meeting and was regarded as their victory. That view was shared in the San Francisco Chronicle the next day, which reported on the mayor's apology and drew the same conclusion as we did, reporting that the apology drew applause. Whatever the motivation, however, it is clear that our producers indicated the applause out of its actual time sequence and therefore misled our viewers. This, then, constitutes an acknowledgement of error and an apology for a breach of our own journalistic standards. The network, in addition to providing the council with a response to each of the three issues, also presented a longer, detailed, and numbered response to each of Mr. Alford's 44 allegations. This is The Gay Life on KSAN in San Francisco, which is your source for information and news about lesbian and gay lifestyles in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Randy Alford, and I'm reading to you from the report of the National News Council in the case of the CBS documentary. The issues. The council staff finds it helpful in attempting to assess the detailed charges to deal with them under the three main headings suggested by CBS News in its response. Such a grouping, we believe, keeps the central questions in focus and thus contributes to clarity in evaluation and presentation. Mr. Alford acknowledged in his letter to the council that CBS has the right to make news judgments with which he might disagree. He said, for example, that he would have included some coverage of lesbians and some coverage of the election of gay supervisor Harry Britt in a broadcast about gay politics. The council staff has excluded from detailed discussion here those allegations of Mr. Alford's that seem to be matters of news judgment, not seriously affecting the ultimate judgment of whether the broadcast, taken as a whole, was fair and accurate. For example, it seems a matter of judgment with little major impact whether CBS ought to have used footage of protest marches or of cruising to introduce the audience to Castro Street in San Francisco's gay area. Similarly, it is a matter of judgment with minor impact whether Mayor Feinstein began to court the gay vote in October or well before that, as Mr. Alford contended. Allegations by Mr. Alford that materially affect the judgment of the program as a whole are covered in the following examination of the three essential grievances. The campaign issue. Mr. Alford charged that CBS overstated the importance of Mayor Feinstein's apology for her comment on the gays and their relationship to community standards. CBS responded that there remains not the slightest doubt, so far as CBS News is concerned, that the issue of community standards, the demand that both the mayor and Quentin Kopp apologize for past statements, became the transcendent issue of the campaign for the gay community. That is true of the specific meeting at which the apology was given and of the campaign at large insofar as it concerned the efforts of the candidate to win the gay vote. The San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle on November 18, 1979, 12 days after the city's primary election, published an interview with David Scott, the defeated gay candidate for mayor. In that report, Examiner writer W.E. Barnes wrote, "David Scott, whose endorsement many feel could tip the balance in the mayor's race, has decided to withhold that endorsement until election eve because he believes both Dianne Feinstein and Quentin Kopp have been evasive and unresponsive to the concerns of the 18,500 people who voted for him in the primary election." Scott said that he reached that conclusion after lengthy conversations in which both candidates either talked around the questions I raised or gave unsatisfactory responses. Questions raised by Mr. Scott, the Examiner report said, included concerns within the homosexual progressive communities over the appointment of a new police chief, the appointment of police commissioners, affirmative action for women, the retention of district elections, the floating of low-interest mortgage revenue bonds for moderate and low-income homebuyers, and Mr. Kopp's embrace of former Mayor Joseph Alioto, who refused to meet with organized groups of gay men and lesbians while in office. Mr. Barnes wrote, "But the major issue, even more important than the next chief, Mr. Scott said, is specific, highly offensive, and degrading comments made by both candidates in the recent past that continue to rankle the city's gay community. What Mayor Feinstein said in the Ladies' Home Journal statement that Mr. Scott and others in the city's gay community found to be highly offensive and degrading was the following. The right of an individual to live as he or she chooses can become offensive. The gay community is going to have to face this. It's fine for us to live here, respecting each other's lifestyles, but that doesn't mean imposing them on others. I do not want San Franciscans to set up a backlash." Mr. Kopp, during a meeting of the Board of Supervisors in 1979, had said, "Tolerance, yes, glorification, no," when a certificate of merit was awarded to Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, two lesbians, for their work on behalf of human rights causes in the city. The Examiner's report continued, quoting Mr. Scott, "I discussed these remarks with both candidates. These comments can set the tenor for their administrations, and I feel they should make some kind of modifying statement. They are completely offensive and unacceptable. I told each of them that, if elected, you are going to be mayor of the whole city, and that means representing everyone, including lesbians and gay men. That's something our community wants addressed. As of now, neither candidate has chosen to do that, and that is certainly heavy in my mind." Following Mr. Scott's primary defeat, in a note thanking members of the Harvey Milk Democratic Club for their support, He wrote that these are some of the questions that I have been asking the mayoral candidates since the November 6th election. Included in a listing of 10 questions was the following. Has either of you changed your mind about these anti-gay statements? If so, would you restate them to reflect your current attitudes about gay people? Both Mayor Feinstein and Mr. Kopp appeared to plead their cases at a meeting of the Harvey Milk Democratic Club held on November 20th, 20 days before the runoff election. The San Francisco Chronicle, on November 21st, in a report headline, "Gays Hear Some Apologies," stated the following. San Francisco's two mayoral candidates, appearing contrite while courting votes that could sway the December 11th election, told a gay political club last night that they were both sorry for their allegedly anti-gay remarks in the past. "If I said things that offended the community, I apologize," Mayor Dianne Feinstein told the Harvey Milk Democratic Club, referring to her published remarks that gays should not flaunt their behavior publicly. "Maybe my choice of words was wrong," said Supervisor Quentin Kopp in his slightly famous tolerance yes, glorification no comment about gays living together. When the votes were tallied, Feinstein had scraped together 73 votes to 14 for Kopp, exactly the 60% needed for the club's endorsement. 34 members voted to endorse no one. To Mr. Alfred's charge that CBS, in concentrating on the community standards issue, relegated other more important issues to a minor role, CBS responded that the issues that surfaced, other than the question of an apology, were the issue of police protection against harassment from police and civilians alike, and to a lesser degree, the issue of proportional gay representation in non-elective bodies. These issues were covered in the broadcast. Early in the broadcast, George Kreil reports that as Mayor Feinstein began her campaign, the gays were mad at her for firing the pro-gay chief of police, a man counted on as their ally. CBS then showed the mayor addressing a meeting of gays on that subject. Feinstein: "It doesn't do any good to have a chief that may be the best thing since apple pie if the men won't follow his leadership." Man: "I suggest, Mayor, then, that without wanting to debate you, that maybe we need a new police department, not a new chief." Later, in a further effort to substantiate the CBS claim that gay power, gay politics did cover other issues in the mayoralty campaign, Mr. Chandler cited Mr. Kreil's depiction of Halloween night on Castro Street. Kreil: "For Captain Jeffries, Halloween has become a nightmare. Each year on this night, more and more toughs have been coming into the gay areas to beat up homosexuals. The night of the City Hall riots, which followed the sentencing of Supervisor Dan White for the assassination of Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Milk, Jeffries' own men had burst into a bar on Castro Street, attacking with billy clubs. It had been called a police riot. But on this Halloween night, no matter what their feelings, Jeffries' men were supposed to protect the gays." The scenes which followed, CBS said, include interviews Kreil had with Captain Jeffries about police behavior and with Cleve Jones, a gay activist who was serving as a monitor within the gay community, about the gay hostility toward the police and their insistence that they, rather than the police, provide security in the area. Later we show the police moving in and the gays' anger at their actions. CBS also referred to the sequence involving the mayor's apology before the Harvey Milk Democratic Club, quoting Mr. Kreil saying, "It wasn't just an apology. She'd offered them a gay police commissioner and political appointments in proportion to their numbers in the city." In sum, Mr. Chandler said, "The only issues which surfaced above and beyond the community standards issue in the campaign and the gay community were those issues of police behavior and protection and appointment to political posts, and these were covered." Mr. Chandler cited other sections of the broadcast in support of the producer's belief that Mayor Feinstein's and Mr. Kopp's apologies were a condition of gay support in the election. These included a statement by the mayor that it is the mayor's responsibility to establish and maintain community standards, a statement by a gay businessman that, quote, "I for one have talked to her specifically about these comments, and she wouldn't make them again," close quote, and another statement by the same person that she would have not had the gay vote if she had continued to make the same kind of comment she did in the Ladies Home Journal throughout the campaign. In the opinion of our two journalists who had followed the campaign throughout, Mr. Chandler said, it was their news judgment that the community standards apology issue was transcendent in the gay community, that it was the single issue that separated the two candidates, that it was the issue that was most important to the gays in determining their support. This was, of course, an editorial judgment, but one based on months of reporting and close observation. In response to Mr. Alfred's charge that Mr. Kreil gave the audience his own voiceover, truncated, watered-down, and confused version of the Ladies Home Journal comment and characterized it as seemingly moderate, Mr. Chandler said, "It is a matter of regret to us that we did not quote directly from the Ladies Home Journal, but chose to characterize the mayor's words." In retrospect, Mr. Chandler said, "It would have been more effective to have used the full quotation. Its inclusion would have made the escalating anger during the campaign about her statement more understandable." Finally, it should be noted that the fury and concern expressed over this issue from other parts of the country is understandable. We were careful to make it clear from the outset that San Francisco, by virtue of its tradition, its tolerance, and the size of its gay community, had achieved a high level of progress in gay issues. Gays were part of the establishment, as we pointed out, in business, in law, in journalism, in medicine, in government. Housing and jobs were apparently not the problem in San Francisco that they have been in other cities, nor have other forms of discrimination. But in focusing on the community standard issue, we incurred the anger of gays in other parts of the country, who felt their unmet objectives had been denigrated. One could hardly expect their anger to be directed at the gay leadership in San Francisco. Instead, it was directed at CBS News. As for San Francisco's gays, we can only speculate that they believed the broadcast had trivialized their problems and their objectives. But we reported what we found. This is The Gay Life on KSAN in San Francisco. I'm Randy Alfred, and I'm reading to you from the report of the National News Council on the CBS documentary Gay Power, Gay Politics. Staff analysis. In interview after interview, gay individuals told the council staff representative that the mayor's remarks, either as reported in the Ladies' Home Journal or as characterized by Mr. Kreil, were offensive to the gay community. And so was the remark by Mr. Kopp. Apologies may not have been insisted upon, as stated by Mr. Kreil. Mayor Feinstein told the council's staff representative that no demand was made of her to apologize, or, as Mr. Kreil put it, to atone for my sins. But it was obvious to the council staff that apologies from both the mayor and Mr. Kopp were high on the gay community's agenda for clarification pending a decision to support or not to support either one of the candidates in the runoff election. The staff examination also revealed something which was not revealed on the broadcast itself, the reasons why the two statements, the mayor's and Mr. Kopp's, were anathema to the city's gay community. Supervisor Britt, who stated that he was interviewed at great length by Mr. Kreil, but who did not appear on Gay Power, Gay Politics, put it this way. Basically, the mayor was saying that she hasn't anything against gay people as long as they behave themselves. That's how it came across to us. She was giving support to that strategy for gay people, which means think what other people want you to feel before you decide what you're going to feel. That's psychological death for gay people. And when we say we want to set our own standards, as Cleve Jones said on the broadcast, we mean simply that we want to be free to explore, in ways natural to us, who we are, and to have a moral sense that comes out of yourself and not out of conformity to the world. Mr. Kreil's reference to hedonism on the broadcast comes through as an endorsement of what you see elsewhere on the program. It tells the viewer that what gay politics is about is hedonism, chain him to the bed and whip him. And that movement of thought is bizarre. People have been whipping other people long before the gay rights movement came along. And I think they're going to be whipping him less as we make sexuality less of an ugly, dirty word in the popular imagination. David Weissman, legislative aide to Mr. Britt, who was present during the staff interview, said that, also historically, when gay people are told to conform to community standards, that means don't hold hands in public, don't kiss in public, don't give any evidence to the outside world that you are anything other than a heterosexual. And that's how the mayor's statement was responded to. We have every right to hold hands on the street as much as any couple does, and that was the response to the mayor's statement. It's not let us have wild orgies in Buena Vista Park. We think our standards are perfectly fine. The implication is that gay standards are hedonistic and crazy and wild. They're not. The sexual issues. Mr. Alfred's complaint charges CBS with exaggerating preoccupation with sex. In its response, CBS interprets this as meaning that the broadcast unfairly portrayed the gays of San Francisco by focusing on sexual matters unconnected with the mayoral campaign. Specifically, they focused on the Buena Vista Park sequence and on the section of the broadcast devoted to sadomasochism. Other questions concerning sexual matters were raised in the complaint. concerning in particular sequences involving San Francisco's annual Beaux-Arts Ball, Castro Street on Halloween night, and a program to demystify homosexuality in the schools. All of these will be examined in this section of the report. Buena Vista Park. Buena Vista Park is a 37-acre tract neighboring on San Francisco's Castro Street district. It was introduced on Gay Power, Gay Politics by Mr. Kreil with a question, should public parks be used for sex? He continued, today it's one of the pieces of territory claimed by the men of the gay community. For the average person, it may not be dangerous to go into this park, but when we came here with our camera crew, a group of gay men surrounded us and forced us to leave. A week later, we came back without our crew, but with a home movie camera. This is what we found. From sunup to sundown, men everywhere, hundreds of them, coming to this park each day for public sex. There follows in this sequence an interview with a family living on the edge of the park. A young boy and a young girl tell what they have seen, and their mother and father express their anxieties. In its response to Mr. Alford's contention that CBS presented no evidence that sex in Buena Vista Park was an issue in the campaign, Mr. Chandler said it was germane. The mayor never stated what she meant when she said that gays should not impose their lifestyles on others. In the absence of such specifics, it seemed to us mandatory to examine precisely those elements of gay lifestyles which involved impositions on the rest of the community, which were potential areas of the very sort of backlash the mayor expressed concern about. It was also essential to differentiate the attitudes between private and public acts. As was pointed out, the glory holes were, in the view of the city, legal because they involved private acts between consenting adults. But the use of a public park for sexual intercourse clearly falls outside the category of private acts, and the fact that such activities were disruptive to residents of the neighborhood was relevant to any discussion of the imposition of lifestyles on others. In response to the charge that Mr. Kreil at no point asked the question, should public parks be used for sex, of any gay leader or spokesperson, Mr. Chandler responded that we did, although such questions did not appear on the broadcast, and that none of the gays we talked with, nor any gay leaders we know of, have publicly deplored public sex in Buena Vista Park. One can only assume that their reasons, at least in part, relate to their concern about the imposition of standards either by heterosexuals upon homosexuals or by homosexuals upon their fellows. Burley Sutton, a gay businessman who was interviewed on several occasions on Gay Power, Gay Politics, told the council staff representative that he was interviewed by Mr. Kreil for from 2.5 to 3 hours, and that not once did Mr. Kreil ask him how he felt about Buena Vista Park. I don't know of anyone who is responsible, he said, who feels that the Buena Vista Park situation should be condoned or encouraged. It's a matter of embarrassment to most of the people I know. It's a small percentage of the gay population that's involved in that scene, and we don't even condone that. In his complaint, Mr. Alford took exception to Mr. Kreil's use of the figure, hundreds of them, in reference to the number of gays who utilize the park, and also to the statement that for the gay men of San Francisco, cruising in Buena Vista Park is done without shame. Hundreds of them, Mr. Alford said, amount to no more than a fraction of a percent of Kreil's own estimate, from 75,000 to 175,000, of the number of gays in the city. Kreil does not and cannot establish that all gay men use the park for sex. And if it is done without shame, why then do the men go deep in the bushes to do it? And why did a group of gay men allegedly chase the CBS camera crew out of the park? CBS responded that Alford does not deny the essential facts that it is used for public sex. Mr. Alford contended that the real issue in the community standards controversy pertained to glory holes and not to Buena Vista Park. According to Mr. Kreil's on-air statement that the authorities take the position that government has no business interfering with them, that what goes on inside are essentially private acts carried out by consenting adults, Mr. Alford said, the district attorney moved against these clubs in March 1979. Bitter and protracted negotiations took place during the spring. Then-Supervisor Dianne Feinstein's 1978 role in relaying the complaint that began red-light abatement proceedings against the clubs was a major issue in gay male circles during the campaign. It was also one of the substantive worries beneath concern about her remarks to the Ladies' Home Journal. This story was covered extensively by the Bay Area Reporter, the Sentinel, and other gay press in March of April of 1979. On June 26, the SF Examiner ran the story on its front page under the banner headline, DA's Gay Sex Club Deal. The deal was an April out-of-court settlement which carefully defined the minimum standards for privacy. Sadomasochism. Aside from a fleeting earlier mention, the subject of sadomasochism comes into the documentary during the Halloween party sequence on Castro Street, when Mr. Kreil encounters Mel Wald, a gay who identifies himself as a bike commander, a part of the gay community's security force. During the day, Mr. Kreil asks, "What's your ordinary work?" Mr. Wald responds, "My ordinary work is a sadomasochist and consultant, or best known as an S&M consultant," to which he adds that, "Part of my profession is I teach police departments, coroners, doctors." "Coroners?" Mr. Kreil asks. "Coroners about S&M," Mr. Wald replies, "so that when they see a body with certain ties, certain implements around, how to distinguish whether it was a forcible, non-forcible, whether the bondage was something that they got into or didn't, whether it was willing or not." Later, during the broadcast, sadomasochism is reintroduced with a statement by Mr. Kreil that the problem for straight politicians courting the vote is that some things about the homosexual community here are undeniably troubling but politically dangerous to challenge. There are things which divide the straight and gay communities, and I suppose one of them are sexual mores. Burley Sutton replies, "Very definitely," and the camera takes the viewer into an S&M toy shop, where Mr. Kreil asks a clerk what kind of people will use this sort of thing. "Is it the lunatic fringe of the community?" The clerk replies, "No, it's everybody. It's bankers, lawyers, doctors. We sell to all types of clientele." A few minutes later, Mr. Kreil poses a question to Rusty Epps, another gay businessman who appears several times on the program. Kreil: "There are a number of things that happen in the gay community which go from the leather bars to the glory holes and to the S&M parlors. Do you all support all these things, or do you draw a line on some of them and say, we ought to clean it up?" Epps: "I'm willing to take it. I support them, with the proviso that these are things that people are doing in private, that if you want to go to the glory holes or if you want to go to an S&M bar, you go there knowing that that's what it is. It's the choice of the individual to do what he or she wishes to do." The sequence continues with a brief interview with San Francisco's coroner Boyd Stevens and a visit with Mr. Wald in an S&M torture chamber. Following the sound of crashing chains, Mr. Kreil asks Mr. Wald, "What are these things, Mel, here?" And Mr. Wald replies, "They're different toys to be used in different manner through the different sessions." Kreil: "We last met Mel Wald on Halloween. On this night, he took us to one of San Francisco's commercial establishments, where you can rent a torture chamber. This one is licensed, perfectly legal." Wald: "Board of Education, very interesting. It has the holes, and when it's used, it can leave a lot of interesting marks. Regulation nightstick, wonderful to be used as a dildo." Preceding and following the torture chamber scene, Mr. Kreil interviews Dr. Stevens. His first question to the coroner is about a new kind of problem that we're facing. "Could you tell us about it?" Dr. Stevens: "We've been seeing for a while now about 10% of our homicides related to homosexual behavior, and this ranges from just homosexual-type behavior, an individual who goes to a bar, picks up another person of their own sex, through and including sadomasochism with bondage and severe injury." Mr. Kreil's second question relates to an institution in this city where people are involved in S&M activities in which they're so dangerous that they have a gynecological table there with a doctor and nurse on hand to sew people up. Dr. Stevens: "Yes, I've heard of these places. We see right now." Kreil: "Well, why are they allowed to flourish?" Dr. Stevens: "Currently, there's no law against them." Responding to the objections to the inclusion of sadomasochism in a broadcast titled "Gay Power, Gay Politics," Mr. Chandler said that the arguments are somewhat different. Again, there is no denial that S&M is practiced by a portion of the gay community. The complaint is that it is also practiced by the heterosexual community, and that the torture chamber shown is owned by and caters to heterosexuals too, and that the S&M question bore no relationship to the issues in the campaign. Mr. Alford contended that S&M is predominantly heterosexual, and gave as his reference a KQED-TV Channel 9 San Francisco documentary titled "S&M, 1 Foot Out of the Closet," broadcast on February 11th and May 26, 1980. Phil Bronstein of KQED-TV, who reported and narrated the program, told the council staff that he determined in his research that S&M activity in the Bay Area was about 90% straight. "It is predominantly heterosexual," he said, to which he added that the torture chamber scene shown on the CBS program was filmed at the Chateau, an S&M parlor that is almost wholly heterosexual. The Chateau's owner, James Hillier, told the council staff that his clientele is about 99 to 99.8% heterosexual. In its detailed response, CBS said, "We pointed out in the film that the chateau was Mr. Wald's choice, presumably because its proprietor was agreeable to let us film there. There are many other S&M establishments in the city which cater exclusively to the gay community." Mr. Hillier said, "I was reluctant and uneasy when they came to my place to film." Mr. Alfred said that Dr. Stevens acknowledged to him that the 10% figure included the killing of homosexuals by heterosexuals. He also said that Kreil earlier in the show estimated the portion of the population at 12% to 25%, but fails to remind his audience of that here. This omission fits CBS's editorial pattern. "No one really knows how many people are gay in San Francisco," Dr. Stevens told the council staff. "You'll have estimates ranging from a low of a few thousand up to an estimate that would make almost every person in the city a gay. If there are 100,000 gays in San Francisco and the rate of gay-related homicides is 10%, that makes a difference. 10% would be a low rate. It is going up. In approximately one-half of the homicides involving homosexuals, the killer either is not a gay or the identity of the killer is unknown. I would say that S&M activities involve a relatively small portion of homosexuals in general, but it's somewhat higher here simply because we happen to have a larger portion of people operating establishments in that field." Dr. Stevens said that he was speaking from hearsay when he said during the broadcast that he had heard of the place referred by Mr. Kreil as having a gynecological table with a doctor and nurse on hand to sew people up. The coroner said that later on during his interview with Mr. Kreil, "I believe we explained that we were unaware of anywhere where there was a doctor in attendance. I personally know of no place where there is a doctor on duty, so to speak, to sew people up. But it's hard for me to say that CBS erred in not going back to what I said later and finishing the sentence that was cut off. They have to cut and fit into a time slot." In its detailed response, CBS said that "we have spoken to the coroner since the documentary, and his remarks stand as broadcast. Mr. Alfred suggests that our account of the S&M parlor is based on hearsay and rumor. He does not, however, say that such an institution is non-existent, and for good reason. Dr. Stevens only confirmed that he knew about this establishment. Our attention was first directed to the S&M parlor in question by another city official who had formerly investigated the S&M world and who related his findings to us." Mr. Chandler said that the complaint overlooks some significant differences between homosexual S&M and heterosexual S&M. "For one thing, to the extent that heterosexual S&M exists, it is not institutionalized, but in fact is an underground activity. While it is true that its practitioners buy or rent equipment from such establishments as depicted, there is no other public manifestation of their activity. Not so in the case of homosexual S&M, which is institutionalized to the extent that the so-called S&M or leather bars are an institution in the gay community. They are public establishments which serve as a gathering place for homosexual sadomasochists, and to one degree or another, some sadomasochism takes place in a number of them. A second significant difference is that while homosexual leaders are quick to defend homosexual S&M, we have observed no one among heterosexuals who would defend heterosexual S&M, at least publicly." This is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco, your source for news and information about the lesbian and gay communities of the Bay Area. I'm Randy Alfred, and I'm reading to you from the National News Council's staff report and findings on my complaint and the complaint of the National Gay Task Force and the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and Human Rights Commission against the CBS show Gay Power, Gay Politics, which was broadcast last April. I'll continue now. The Halloween Party. A sequence involving a Halloween party on Castro Street in the gay community is introduced on the broadcast as follows. Kreil: "The problem is that the gay lifestyle is already creating a backlash in the city. Nowhere is this more apparent than Halloween night on Castro Street. It's a custom in this old family neighborhood to begin Halloween with a party for the children. The traditional remains, but since the gays took over here, they've introduced a new experience for the kiddies." There follows a scene showing a frightened or apprehensive girl, with film cuts back and forth from the girl to costume men, one of whom was clad in a sexually explicit costume. Mr. Alfred said that he talked with the girl's mother and that she said her daughter was reacting to being shoved onto the stage, and she was generally freaked out, since she and I had just been separated from another mother and daughter. There was a real crush. It was terrible. According to Mr. Alfred, Mrs. Trina Robbins, the mother of the girl, blamed the violence in the air on non-gay punks from outside the neighborhood, who were there to hassle people. William Paul, a lecturer on interdisciplinary studies at San Francisco State University, who attended the party as part of a research project sponsored by the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues, told the council's staff representative that I did not observe any sexually explicit costumes or inappropriate behavior in the vicinity of the kids' party, which was actually quite early in the evening. I recall the girl in the filming and felt she was suffering from stage fright. It seems quite likely that serious distortions of actual events were made in editing. The social atmosphere at the children's party, although quite crowded, was one of warmth and intergroup conciliation. Hardly the lurid, threatening images portrayed. Parents and relatives participated. In its detailed response, CBS declared that as to the Alfred claim that one of the little girls seen on the stage at Halloween was frightened by non-gay punks from outside the neighborhood instead of by the stream of homosexuals dressed in bizarre costumes on the stage, we will allow the film to speak for itself. Later in this sequence, following the children's party, Mr. Kreil states, as the night wore on, it looked as though there would be no major confrontation between straights and gays, but it had been an ordeal for Captain Jeffrey's men. For hours now, they had stood by silently as the gays provocatively taunted them. Mr. Alfred said that the video shows someone in a bug-like costume, acting like a bug, perhaps intending to amuse more than taunt. In any case, the major taunting in this scene takes place as Kreil repeatedly and unsuccessfully tries to elicit anti-gay responses from two policemen, one a commanding officer. To their credit, and to the credit of the San Francisco Police Department, both officers remain resolutely calm, non-judgmental, and professional. CBS responded that, surely he is aware that the gay leaders in Castro Street were deeply concerned about police attitudes. A number of policemen had recently attacked gays on Castro Street. The questions, Kreil asked the police, were the questions on the minds of gay leaders that night. As seen at the end of the Halloween sequence, these concerns were well-founded. At about 2 a.m., the police moved on to Castro Street and began bullying the gays in the manner that only barely escaped breaking into a truly dangerous confrontation. Captain George Jeffries of the San Francisco Police Department, a district commander who was present at the party, told the council staff that it is standard procedure for the department to meet with leaders prior to such events. We met with gay leaders before the Halloween party. We ran over the ground rules, how many police will have, diversion of traffic, the use of monitors. We agreed to take the side streets to prevent trouble involving those coming and leaving the main street. The monitors from the gay community would take Castro Street, aside from a couple of squads and undercover personnel. There were from 30,000 to 35,000 people there that night, and after it was over, we had made about 15 arrests, with one half of them non-gays from outside the area. About three of the arrests were for assaults. The rest were for drunken behavior. I wrote in my report to the department that the night was totally orderly. There was a skirmish, but it occurred late, when only about 200 or 300 people were left, mostly drunks who didn't want to go home. We made eight of our arrests then and withdrew. Things like that look bad on film, but it was really over in about 10 or 15 minutes. A relatively minor story. I don't think the presence of a television crew had any effect. The Demystification Program. One of Mr. Alfred's major charges is that Mr. Kreil editorialized in the documentary when he commented on the mayor's financial support of the Human Rights Foundation's program in the schools of demystification of homosexuality. The relevant segment of the broadcast went as follows. Kreil. For these men, political power is only one of many goals. Bob Sass is a chairman of the Human Rights Foundation. He's doing something that frightens many heterosexuals. He's working to introduce what the gays call a demystification program into the schools. Sutton. Its basic goal is exactly what it says. It's the education of the general public. It's not an attempt to convert, but simply acquaint children of a formidable age that differences exist with respect to sexual orientation. Kreil. And will it present homosexuality as a alternative, normal lifestyle? Sutton, yes. Kreil, because? Sutton, I consider it a normal lifestyle, certainly. Kreil, whether it's normal or not, scenes like this remain difficult for the straight world to accept. For Dianne Feinstein, the problem was more complex. She had an election to win, and her homosexual friends were now telling her that mere acceptance of this lifestyle was not enough. She must become an advocate of their causes. At this point, Jerry Berg, former president of the foundation, comments, "It was exciting for us when it came time to raise some substantial funds for the Human Rights Foundation. We invited a number of city officials, including the mayor. The price of the evening was $500. Kreil, what you're saying is that the mayor of San Francisco personally contributed $500 to the Human Rights Foundation, which is working to introduce the teaching of homosexuality into the schools. Berg, that's one of our programs. Kreil, that's incredible, isn't it? Berg. Well, it's satisfying to us because we feel so strongly about these programs that we love to have support from everywhere. And in the mayor's office, it's most welcome. Criticizing Mr. Kreil's usage of the word incredible, Mr. Alfred cited a comment made by Mr. Kreil on a follow-up program titled, Has the Truth Been Told?, broadcast by KPIX-TV, the San Francisco CBS affiliate, on the same evening as Gay Power, Gay Politics. Mr. Kreil said, I think that one thing that San Francisco can do, if Kinsey is right, and one out of every 10 Americans are gay, we all have to learn to live together. San Francisco should be the city which teaches the nation how to do that. Mr. Alfred said that the demystification program is a conscious attempt by straight and gay San Franciscans to learn to live together, to replace queer-bashing hatred with understanding. If Kreil found the program so incredible, maybe he should have covered it. He would have learned that it was motivated by the same problem of anti-gay violence, which CBS ignored as an issue in the mayoral campaign. In its detailed response, CBS said that Mr. Alfred misrepresents the Kreil response, incredible, by not citing the full exchange. That response was both a reaction and a question to the three interviewees. Kreil was acknowledging the unprecedented action that Dianne Feinstein, a traditional heterosexual politician, had taken by publicly supporting such a highly controversial homosexual program. The interviewees acknowledged the novelty and uniqueness of the mayor's position with a laugh, followed by Mr. Berg's remark that it was exciting for us. The Human Rights Foundation, incorporated in August 1977, is a tax-exempt organization whose purpose is to eliminate those perceptions concerning human rights and human sexuality that limit the full self-expression of all members of society. In describing its Demystifying Homosexuality project, funded by the Playboy and Hazen Foundations, the Human Rights Foundation says it provides carefully selected and trained gay male and lesbian speakers to the Bay Area high schools and junior colleges outside the city of San Francisco, who are invited to answer questions from students in such high school courses as health education and family life education, and in such junior college courses as counseling and marriage and the family. The project, which started in the fall of 1978 after a pilot program in 1977, has been invited by the San Francisco Unified School District's Advisory Committee on Health and Family Life Education to provide scheduling assistance for lesbian and gay male speakers in certain San Francisco high schools to meet with administrators, counselors, teachers, or students in their classes. Robert W. Sass, president of the foundation, identified but not appearing on the CBS program as chairman of the foundation, told the council staff that the benefits of the program have been almost universally acknowledged, and I have nothing in the foundation's record in the way of a complaint from anyone, teachers, students, or parents. Mr. Sass said that what is very true is that what we hear consistently from teachers and students is that it is usually the first time that many of the students have had a chance to speak with someone who is gay. They carry around enormously strong stereotypes and myths about what gay people are like, and they find that gay people are really just like they are, except that their sexual preferences are different. For me, the sadness was that there was no effort made by CBS to explore the program in depth and to look at it with real objectivity. Our program does not teach homosexuality. It introduces students to the fact that there are homosexuals living in their community and that sometimes they are in their midst. And we've just about run out of time on The Gay Life this morning. So next week on The Gay Life, you will hear the conclusion of the staff report of the National News Council and the issue of the CBS complaint. That means we'll discuss the Bozar Ball and the issue of the applause which CBS added to the mayor's apology for her Ladies' Home Journal comments. I'll also run over what the council actually decided and talk to you about the dissent by Mr. William Rusher. Also next week on The Gay Life, you'll hear an interview with Jesus Barragan of the Gay Latino Alliance. The Gay Life would like to hear from you, so if you have any comments, criticisms, or suggestions, write to us at The Gay Life, care of KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, California, 94104. Once more, that's The Gay Life, KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, California, 94104. I'm Randy Alfred, and I produce The Gay Life. If you're listening to the show on Saturday morning, this show will be repeated late Sunday night at midnight. So tell a friend to start the week with The Gay Life on KSAN, your source for news and information about the lesbian and gay communities of the San Francisco Bay Area.